Hello. 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 Hello.
Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everyone. Karen Conti here, an abbreviated show tonight, but we are still going to get to your legal questions. We're going to spend this whole hour, if you'd like, answering your legal questions. If you have any comment about news stories, anything about R. Kelly that you find interesting, there was a very interesting Texas story about the woman who shot the man who she thought she was in her own house. If you have some questions about that, or anything you see in the news, except politics, I will be happy to weigh in and try to answer the question or steer you in the right direction. 312-981-7200. Ben is the producer. Ben Anderson will be taking the calls. You're going to call it down to just the facts that are important. We'll get you on the air. You can use your name or not. And hopefully we can steer you in the right direction and in the process perhaps educate some other people about some of the topics that we usually talk about, like employment, like divorce, like small claims, like credit card debt, bankruptcy, foreclosure, wills, estate planning, those types of things. Anything that might pique your interest, we will probably talk about it. Before we go to the phones, and while Ben is collecting the calls here, there were two studies that I saw today that are not legal related, but I thought were very, very interesting. And I'm going to ask you this, Roger Badish, just to see if you're listening. Roger, are you there?
Yes, okay, I am here.
Okay, there you go. Okay, there was a study that said, I'm going to ask you this. Do you think that people who eat by themselves eat more or less than people who dine with others? And think of yourself. If you're going to dine by yourself, do you think you generally eat more when you're sitting by yourself or, say, with family or friends at a table, whether it's a family dinner table or out to a restaurant?
I think by yourself, because when you're in a group, first of all, it lasts longer. You're talking to people and you kind of lose track of what you're eating. And then you don't want to, like, be embarrassed if you sit there and say, no, I've had enough. And especially if you're not the host, you don't want to, you know, get the host upset with you that you're not eating their food. So you probably eat more than you would normally eat.
Okay, so you said with other people you eat more, right? Is that
yes.
your answer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is what the study said. And, you know, I guess I was a little surprised because I wondered if people who overate would be embarrassed maybe to do it around friends, or maybe because the social activity was distracting, it was more a social event rather than an eating event. And I find myself experiencing that. When I'm out with friends, I'm more interested in talking than I am eating, which I'm always very interested in eating. Always very interested in eating. But you know what I mean? The emphasis
sure.
is on the event and not so much the shoveling of food into my mouth. Whereas when I'm by myself, I don't really like eating by myself because I find that eating is kind of like a social thing and it makes me happy to sit with somebody else and eat. I don't know if that
yeah,
makes sense.
I when we go out for dinner to a restaurant, I eat more than I would if I was at home.
Well, but sure, because the food's better.
Well, the food's better, and it's a treat.
And it's a
also,
treat.
Also, it's
yes.
not eating out every night, you know. So, and at home, I'm conserving money. I don't want to spend a lot of money on my food. Plus, I don't want to spend a lot of time on my food at home. In a restaurant, you're out. They've spent the time. You don't mind sitting and waiting. Plus, if you go out to someone else's home, they've done all the work already. You're
well,
just bringing a bottle of wine
exactly.
or something.
Exactly. And there's another point to this, and this is my theory that I think is backed up by science, is that is when you prepare food and you're smelling it and you're mm-hmm. chopping it and you're tasting it, and that might even be just heating something up,
right.
but at least there's a time when you're kind of experiencing the food before you actually start eating, and they say that that can satisfy you because your body and your brain is telling you you're already in the process of eating. So when you reach the full point, you realize it better than when someone just puts it right down in front of you.
Exactly. When I do barbecues, or if I'm making my signature Caesar salad or something else for dinner, I'm not hungry when I'm done cooking.
Yeah,
I haven't been nibbling on stuff. It's just for some reason I'm tired of food. by the time I serve it.
I'm exactly the same way.
There you go.
Yep, that's great. Okay, so we all agree on that. Okay, the next study that I saw has nothing to do with the first one, but this study shows that people who have friends who are getting divorced, it's called the domino divorce effect. People who have friends who are getting divorced are 75% more likely to do so themselves. And according to the study, the reason is because if your pal is getting a divorce and breaking up, that makes people reflect and sort of look at their own life and their own marital issues. And to the extent that they have been dissatisfied but maybe not focusing on it, they are now doing that because their friend is going through the process. And I guess doing family law, as I do, that surprises me. Does that surprise you?
Yeah. Wow. I wouldn't have thought that. I mean, it's possible. I'm not discounting that possibility. I don't know if the odds would have been in favor of it, but I would think that if your friend is going through a divorce, you're married, and your friend's going through a divorce, you would be there for that friend as opposed to focusing on the issues with your own marriage.
Well, right. And also, you know, going through a divorce for most people is not a happy time.
No.
It's a very traumatic time. All the things you have in your life are up in the air, your children, your home, your money, and where you're going to live. You know, maybe it's an emotional relationship breakup as well. So you have this horrible thing going on in your life. Most people, when you ask them what's one of the worst times in your life besides deaths of loved ones, it's usually a divorce. And so you would think by watching your friend go through this horrendous process, an expensive process, unfortunately, the way the law is, that they would say, I think I might just stay married for a little bit longer because I don't want to go through that process.
Yeah, but, one would think that.
Yeah, one would think that. But, you know.
But it's the other way around.
These studies are very, very interesting. Wow. Anyway, I'm going to ask for your legal calls. 312-981-7200. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. It's Karen Conti Show you're listening to. We're taking your legal questions, 312-981-7200. I see the phone lines are lighting up. But in the process, when Ben is getting your questions, I had an interesting question that came in on my email address. It was a nice listener who said that he used to be a medical professional. Now he's a teacher. And he wanted to know what his liability might be if he administered first aid. He no longer obviously has malpractice insurance because he's no longer a medical professional. And he had some incidents at his school where there was a stabbing and then there was a choking of a student. And he was, wanted to come and give first aid, but he was concerned that he would be sued. And he was actually concerned because as a medical professional, even though he's a former medical professional, is he going to be held to a higher standard than the average guy? So basically, I told him that we have a Good Samaritan Act, and most states do have one. And basically, if you are a licensed medical professional, which he's not, if you're giving emergency care in good faith, meaning you're trying your hardest and you're not being compensated, that you are immune from civil liability, meaning you cannot be found to have done something negligent in harming that person that you're attending to. Interestingly, there's a special act for people who give aid on an airplane, and that's another blanket immunity. The question is, if you're not a licensed medical professional, the Illinois Good Samaritan Act kind of protects those people, too. It's not as strong, but it basically says the same thing. If you're doing it in good faith, as long as you're not doing it recklessly in some way, and you're trying your best and you're not being compensated for it, and it is an emergency situation and there's no other choice, that you will probably be immune. Now, the question is, what does that mean, you're immune? Well, could a lawyer still file a lawsuit against you? Absolutely. Would you have to defend it in order to get it dismissed under this law? Yes, you would, which means you would have to hire a lawyer, and that can be very, very expensive. So, again, I'm a person that I have jumped in and done the Heimlich maneuver twice in my life, and I never thought twice about it, nor would I ever think twice about it, because my instinct would be to help somebody in need if I could do that. My instinct is not to think about me being sued, but being a lawyer, I suppose I have it a little bit easier if I do get sued. I would say that you're probably immune, and you should always look to your insurance, your homeowner's insurance. Would it cover you in doing something like that? Because perhaps your homeowner's insurance in the the liability section, when it protects you from things where you're sued, whether it's from things you say or from somebody tripping and falling in your property, that section should tell you one way or the other if you're covered by that. And if you can't read your policy because it's too complicated, call your agent and see if that is something that is covered. Because if you're in a place like a school, you might very well be called upon to do that. And certainly you want to protect yourself, and you also want to do the right thing and helping your kids. All right. Well, give us a call here. We've got some callers, 981-7200, 312-981-7200, or text to that same number. Hi, Dawn, in Arlington Heights. Welcome to WGN. How are you?
Hi, Karen. Good. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling on behalf of a beneficiary of a trust, and he needs to purchase a car, and his with the trust about having the money withdrawn, which they, you know, have agreed to do, but they want to put a lien on the car, and he hasn't been able to get a straight answer from them about why they would want to do that, since it is his money that he will be using to purchase it. Why would they put a lien on it? Could you help me with that?
So let me just get straight as best I can what the facts are. So this is a guy who his family or someone put away a fund of money for him, and there's a trustee who's sort of doling it out, and he has to go to the trust, and the trust decides whether he gets the car or the home or the money, correct? Is that how it works?
The trustee is a family member with whom he's no longer on good terms.
Okay.
So that person has kind of washed their hands of him and won't help him in this, and also has had the trust transferred to another company that's out of state, which makes it more difficult for him as well.
Okay.
So he's trying to deal with them by himself and doesn't understand why they want to lean on the car.
Okay. I'm not sure I can give an answer, but my concern, maybe what it, and I'm thinking they're buying him a car outright. They're not going, is he making payments on it with trust money, or are they going
no.
to buy it for him?
No, he would just request that the money be withdrawn from his account. He has ample money in the account to purchase the car, and that they transfer the car to the car dealership.
Yeah. Okay.
to buy the car.
Dawn, the only thing that I can think of is this, that they are concerned that they are going to give him this car, they'll buy it for him, and he's going to turn around and sell it. And if he turns around and sells it for the cash, then the trust is going to be circumvented in a way. So perhaps if they put a lien on it, that means the lien has to be satisfied before the car is sold. I think that's probably what's going on here. They want to make sure he doesn't liquidate it and get the cash instead, if that makes any sense. But Dawn, I think what your friend should do, if he feels like he's not being treated correctly by the trustee, or if the trust language is not being followed, because whoever put that money away probably had rules about how the money would be doled out for living expenses and necessary items. And if he's not being treated fairly because the person in charge is someone who he's at odds with, he might need to have an estate lawyer just take a look at it and give him some advice about what, if anything, he can do to make sure that that's being honored. Okay? And I'm going to give you my office information in case you want to send me an email, and I can give you a referral. I have someone who can do that for your friend. Okay, Dawn? Okay, thank you. I'm going to give out that number. It's 312-332-7800, or you can email me at WGN@AskKarenConti.com. I have no problem giving you referrals to people who are good in the area of law. I've got some people in the will and trust area. I don't do that work myself, but I'm happy to help you. Okay, let's go to David. Hi, David. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you doing tonight?
So far, so good, Karen. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call and for the free advice. I hope I can be brief here.
Sure.
Calling for a friend of mine. About a year ago, he signed an expense-sharing agreement for the apartment where he rents in Central Illinois, took in a roommate. And long story short, about 8.5 months after that, they're still together, but she's not paying what she said. And so he sent her an email that said, I think we should end this. Here's 30 days notice. So fast forward to about a month ago, she's still around, but about a month ago, she left and hasn't been back. When she moved in what looks like some valuable furniture that she hasn't been back to pick up yet. And she wasn't there every night when they were living together before as our roommates. And now they had a dispute, and she's been gone just over 30 days. And he's concerned about $2,000 that she still owes him and wants to end this. And
okay.
There's a couple more wrinkles, too, but I think that's a lot to get started right there.
Okay, so, David, generally speaking, when someone is living in a place, you can't just say, like, leave. So, but she left on her own volition, but generally speaking, you have to evict that person. You have to go through that whole process of eviction, which is, people don't know that. People say, I'm going to have a friend come and stay for a while just because I'm a nice guy. You have to get rid of them in a legal way, and that is an eviction, and that can be very tricky because there's all kinds of things that you have to file. In this case, she left, okay? So has she left and vacated permanently? Well, we hope so because she's not paying the rent. The question, or the two questions that I'm going to address are, what do we do with her furniture, and what do we do about the money that's owed, the $2,000 that she agreed to pay? First of all, as to the $2,000, you can bring a small claim against her, and you would have to, you don't want to hire a lawyer, it'd be way too expensive, cost more than $2,000 just to hire the lawyer. And he would have to go to court, he'd fill out the forms down in central Illinois, whatever county that is, Champaign County or wherever it is, and you would have to go to court and get a judgment. The problem is, you get a judgment against her, you have to collect it, which means that you have to find assets, and you have to find a bank account that she has. And so is it going to be worth it to pursue $2,000? It may not be worth it unless she isn't concerned with her credit and doesn't want the judgment on her record. As to the furniture, this is tricky. There's no hard and fast rule as to when you can get rid of the furniture. What I would do is I would change the lock. She's gone, that she's vacated the premises voluntarily, that maybe he sends a note saying, this is what you did and when you did it, and I have your furniture, when will you pick it up? And give her 14 days, and then give her another 5 days or 10 days, and then tell her in an email, this is what I'm going to do with your furniture if you don't pick it up. And the safest thing would be is to get a storage unit and put it in storage, but that can be costly. At that point, you might want to put it for sale on Craigslist to keep the money in an account just in case she comes back for it. And you can turn over the money and say, this is what I did. But that's my best advice. There's no hard and fast rule about when you can dispose of somebody's property. Okay, David, does that help you out there?
It does some, so he couldn't use that as collateral if the written agreement they have doesn't mention anything about that.
So what you're saying is take the property, sell it, and then use it to apply to the $2,000, right?
Yes, it wouldn't match it, but it would make it less.
Well, you know, and if she doesn't come for it and she doesn't come for the money, I mean, you can take that position and let her sue you. I mean, technically, are you allowed to do that? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But is she going to sue you over a few thousand dollars? I mean, maybe that's what you do. And maybe you tell her in the email, you come pick it up in 14 days. If not, I'm going to sell it and keep the money for the money that you owe me. You know, that's a fair thing to do. From a legal standpoint, you know, if she hasn't abandoned the furniture yet, if someone deems that to, you know, then she would be entitled to the money and you'd have to pursue the $2,000 separately. That's the legal answer. But really, the bottom line is that would be a fair thing to do. Okay.
If she's been gone over 30 days, is the furniture already considered abandoned, or that's
there's no hard and fast rule, David. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I mean, it seems like a reasonable amount of time, and it seems like it's reasonable for what you did. Okay, I'm going to have to run. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're back with The Karen Conti Show. We're taking your legal questions now. Now's the time to call 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, or text to that same number. Let's go to the phones. Michelle in Wheaton has been holding. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a friend, and she's living in a townhouse that was built in the 1970s. She's lived there for 17 years now, and the association now wants to replace wood on the chimney outside. So they're telling her that she needs to cut part of her concrete step and be responsible for the payment of it in order for them to replace the wood. and her she's already been fined $100 for this already, and associations usually are responsible for what is outside. So does she have any recourse for this?
That's a real specific question. The first place you go on these kinds of issues, Michelle, is the bylaws, and you see exactly mm-hmm. what they need to do and what's covered. So you're saying the step, when you say the step on her on the outside of her place?
Yes.
Okay, and why is that affected by the chimney?
I guess they're telling her in order for them to replace some wood, she needs to do this. And they did send her a letter stating that they couldn't cover it because apparently some guy had termite damage, so they had no money in their budget to do that. So now it's her and another lady that they are requesting do this. They're the only two.
Yeah, this is something I would have to look at the bylaws, and you probably would want to have somebody who does this kind of work. And there are lawyers who do just homeowners association work. I actually have a friend of mine who used to work for me who does this kind of work. Because I can't tell you, because this is complicated. You know, the common areas, certainly those are things that they can decide to fix, and then they can have all of the homeowners pitch in for that, of course. You know, that's when, you know, people, they want to replace the windows on a big building, so everyone has to pitch in $2,000. In this, they're telling her she has to do some individualized repair to her place in order to put in this chimney or something like that. Are they able to do it? I would have to go to the language of that, the bylaws, to see if that is warranted. In fact, you might, before you hire a lawyer or you get anyone involved, you might want to ask them, what bylaw are you going under that you are requiring me to do this? Have them state in writing their authority or their rule, or what are they relying on to tell her that she has to do that? Why don't you start with that? And if you need a referral for someone who might take a look at this, let me know, okay?
Yeah, could you actually give me a referral?
I really could. I'm going to put you on hold, and I will give you out my email address. I have a list of all these people. Her name is Karen as well. She's an excellent lawyer, and she can do this for you, you know, with good experience behind her, okay?
Okay.
All right, Michelle.
Thank you.
Take care. And that email address is WGN@AskKarenConti.com, WGN@AskKarenConti.com. And when you do that, you know, I'm happy to help you. Sometimes I just send you a link to something, or maybe I refer you to a lawyer, or sometimes I refer you to a lawyer who might be able to help you get a lawyer in a different area. I had someone email me this week, and I didn't know anybody in the particular area in Wisconsin, but I knew someone in another area in Wisconsin. So I said, call this lawyer, and this lawyer is probably going to know somebody in this other area in Wisconsin. So sometimes it's a little bit of a networking process. And, you know, I hope it helps people. I know it does. I get a lot of nice thank yous on these things because it really is hard to know who are the good lawyers. When you Google lawyers, you just don't always know that they're the best ones. You know, looking at the billboard or a bus stop seat, you know, that's not the lawyer that's necessarily the person that is trusted and who charges well and who's reputable. So I'm happy to at least help you with some of these things. Let's go to Dave in Chicago. Hi, Dave. Welcome to WGN. You have a legal question.
Hi, Karen. I'm wondering, it's kind of a question out of the ordinary. When a person has a problem with the U.S. Postal Service, meaning, you know, lost or stolen packages, they usually leave it up to the post office themselves because they sort of have an in-house investigative team. Now, I've done that before, and I never really got anywhere, and I'm wondering if there's any other alternative a person can, any other route a person can take to have this matter given the attention it needs.
Well, could you tell me what the problem is? Do you think people are stealing your mail?
No, I have I have a sister who, because of a particular medical condition, her memory is not always so great. She has mailed probably 4 or 5 packages to me in the past year that never have gotten to me. Sometimes she forgets to have the packages certified or notarized so you can have a tracking number. which is granted the responsible thing to do.
But David, but why is that the fault of the post office? What are you getting at? That what is your gripe with the post office?
It's getting to be a pattern, and I know for a fact from my own local post office that there are some bad Apple employees that work in them, and I've been told that by the branch manager of my former one. But this is getting to be a pattern, and I don't want to go to the local post office to have this taken care of.
Okay. I got other people and I want to get to everyone. I'm not sure that I understand the problem, because you're admitting that your sister maybe doesn't address things properly, but the idea that, you know, there's just some other way to get to the post office to figure out who's doing what, and it's hearsay that you've got some bad apples at the post office. I mean, you don't have a specific information about someone doing something wrong, like throwing it away or misdirecting it. So I think you should lodge your complaints and see if, you know, if that can help you. But I just don't think there's any legal thing that you can demand or take it from there. But thank you, David. Thank you for your call. It's an unusual situation. I don't know what you do. I mean, if things are addressed incorrectly, they're going to probably go to the wrong person. I frankly am amazed that things get to where they're going so quickly. I don't know about you, but, you know, in this day and age of email, everything is so immediate. But, you know, the post office does a pretty good job of getting things to where they're supposed to go. Okay, 981-7200, 312-981-7200. I have a texter who says, I have two female family members who have children with a person that they are not married to. Is it a good idea or necessary to get a court order to set up financial considerations for the children? Oh, I love that question, because the answer is yes, yes, yes. When people are not married and they have children together, you can file a petition for what they call for paternity, even if paternity is not contested. And what you do when you file for paternity is you get an agreement between the parents, and it's just like a divorce in that you're not splitting up property or getting maintenance or alimony or any of that stuff. But what you're doing is you're figuring out how you're going to raise these children separate and apart. So you'll have what we call an allocation judgment. Who's going to make the decisions for school? Who makes the decisions for medical, for extracurricular activities, for religion? How are the children going to be transported to school? Who's going to have them on what days? Who's going to spend holidays with them? Who pays for their medical insurance? Who provides the unpaid medical coverage for things that aren't covered by insurance? All of those things are very important items that you need to have an agreement on in writing, enforceable by court. And I'm not trying to say that people can't get along and raise their children together. A lot of people do it very well. But when a problem comes up, and there is a confrontation about that, who gets the children for Christmas or who's going to pay for braces? All of a sudden, there's a $6,000 bill for braces. And now everyone's pointing and saying, no, you pay, and no, I'm going to pay. That all needs to be in writing. It needs to be thought out. Do you need a lawyer for that? You really probably should have a lawyer for that. I know it can be expensive, but I think if you're amicable, and the time to do it is when you're amicable. The time to do it is when you're getting along, and not the time that you do it when you start to have a fight about it, because then people dig in and it becomes more difficult to come to an agreement. So to the texter, if you have any questions about that, give me a text or give me an email at my office or call me and I'll be happy to help you. I can actually give you a sample parenting agreement. There's some standard parenting agreements in the area, and I can send it to you, and you can take a look at it and see if that's something that you can maybe do yourself, or you can hire a lawyer or get a referral from me. That email address, WGN@skarenconti.com. We're going to finish up still. Legal questions, 312-981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back to The Karen Conti Show. We're taking your legal questions. Their phone lines are open. Ben has nothing to do. Ben is sitting there doing nothing. He's not earning his pay. So call us, 312-981-7200. You'll talk to Ben. You'll tell him your legal question. Or you can text in if you don't want to talk to Ben. I can understand understand that, sort of. 312-981-7200. I have had a bunch of questions today that came in on my email about class action lawsuits. And I want to talk a little bit about class action lawsuits because we're hearing a lot about the vaping lawsuits. We're hearing about the Sterigenics lawsuits, that Willowbrook company that had some emissions that were causing some problems. And so I'm just going to kind of talk a little bit about what it means when you get a class action notice. We've all gotten one, right? It's a bunch of legalities in small print, and it tells you that you're part of a class action. And the question is, should I sign it? Should I become part of it? What do I do? What are my obligations? And if I sign something or become part of a class action, is this something that's going to impact me adversely down the line? And the answer to your question is that it really won't. The only thing that you're giving up by becoming part of the class action is your right to sue the company that's at issue individually. So let's just say a typical case is, say your credit card is maybe charging you too much interest. That's against what is in the contract, and you're part of the class, and they're saying that we're going to go after the bank for this interest that they are charging you. Well, you wouldn't probably hire a lawyer to go after the $10 or the $20 or whatever it is that you're owed. No lawyer would take the case for free or on a contingency, and you're not that interested in litigating over that little amount of money. So if you sign up and you're part of the class action, you will then be processed like everybody else. There's probably thousands of people in the class action. That's what class actions are. And when and if the case is settled or goes to verdict, you will get your check. And as I always say, you'll get your check and you can have a Starbucks coffee with the proceeds. And that brings me to another point when I hear this quite a bit. That, you know, the lawyers are the ones who make all the money in a class action. You know, these people get like $2 and then the lawyers make millions of dollars. How is that fair? Are these class action lawyers, are they villains or are they heroes? And just, you know, essentially the reason that we have class actions, the reason that the laws were passed to create class actions are to protect consumers who are defrauded or perhaps injured by some big company, right? So usually consumers don't have the wherewithal to hire a lawyer, like I just said. So this allows a lawyer to take on a case that has a lot of people, but maybe not so much injury, but who's doing something wrong and who might, you know, otherwise not hire the lawyer and pursue it. And that, so therefore you're holding these big companies responsible for their conduct, holding them to their contracts, making sure they're not polluting the environment, making sure they're not making drugs that are hurting and harming people. So in my opinion, that class actions are a good thing. I don't do class actions. I don't make money in class actions. But I do like the fact that class actions are a way that change society. If you look at some of the things in the past, like Agent Orange, that was a class action suit. It led to a change in how countries deal with these kinds of exfoliants, I think that's the right word, or these kinds of chemicals that they use in warfare. Also, the Target data breach, that was a big class action. And I think that you see companies after that change their ways because it was such a harmful thing to Target when the data was disseminated. And one of my favorites is Brown versus Board of Education. Brown versus Board of Education went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that was the case where they said that separate but equal schools are not okay, that we have to allow kids of color go to schools with kids of all types, and that it's not okay to have separate schools for African Americans and separate schools for white people. That started out as a class action lawsuit. A lot of people don't know that, and it wound its way through the courts and went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and got that ruling, which has changed the way schooling has been since that time. So in my view, class actions are good. They change companies. They prevent companies from doing the wrong thing because there's always the class action lawyers out there threatening to bring the lawsuits. And then the other question is how to find a class action lawyer. And, there's mass torts, which is slightly different than a class action. Mass torts is when, let's say there is a medicine that is harming people. There are side effects that we didn't know about and that are very harmful. That's called a mass tort. So what happens is that gets handled in mass. That means you have a bunch of different consumers who are suing the same company. But at the end of it, your case gets tried for the damages separately, meaning if one person died as a result of that drug and maybe the other person had stage two kidney failure, those are two separate types of damages, and those the monetary part of it would be tried separately. That's a mass tort. But you can Google and find out where people have brought these class actions. And normally I don't tell people to Google because that's not a good way to find a good lawyer. But in the area of class actions, the courts will certify the class, meaning they will find that the lawyers are competent to handle these cases. And usually the people who do it are very reputable because they do these kinds of class actions all the time. And if the court has found them to be competent, you're probably in good hands. So, and then you can always email me and I can try to find you somebody, or ask a lawyer or a friend of yours, who might be in the legal field, and maybe they can help you with that as well. So, that's kind of class action 101. 312-981-7200. I want to talk a little bit about R. Kelly. Actually, I don't want to talk about R. Kelly, but I'm going to anyway. There was something in the news this week that his lawyer filed a motion to have, it said it was unfair that his two girlfriends couldn't come at the same time for visitation. And that was somehow unfair to him, and that they wanted the judge to do something about it. So what are my thoughts on this? We talked about it a little bit this week on Cochran, but, you know, I just don't know why the lawyer did that. Here's a guy who's got charges in, what, five different jurisdictions, and he could spend the rest of his life in jail, no question about it. And his lawyer's asking for his two girlfriends, part of his harem, apparently, to come and be able to visit together. Well, the MCC, the Metropolitan Correctional Center, is a very dangerous place. There are a lot of people there who have been alleged to have done really bad things like murder and drugs and gang activity and sexual abuse. And you have very specific rules. You can't wear shorts. You can't wear, I once had an associate who had a skirt on that was just above her knee, but when she sat down, it rode up her legs and they made her go and change and come back with something else. This is a place that has high regulations, and for good reason, because they are not in the business of having a hookup site. They're in the business of keeping people safe while they're behind bars. So the idea that the lawyer brought this motion, I just don't know what he's trying to do. Is he trying to show that R. Kelly is a special guy because he's a celebrity? Is he playing on the whole celebrity thing? Does he think that perhaps a jury pool is going to be impressed with R. Kelly because he's got two girlfriends? Frankly, I think it plays right into the idea that he's got these young girls all over him and doing things for him that just because of his celebrity. I think it makes him look bad. I just don't understand exactly why he brought that. And he's going to lose it because the judge has nothing to do with the MCC. The MCC has its own rules. And if you go online and see what the rules are, they're extremely, extremely rigorous. And he's going nowhere with that. So it doesn't make any sense that I can see. But if he's listening, he can certainly give me a call and tell me why he did it. Let's go to Margaret. Hi, Margaret. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. Hi, Margaret. Is you almost ready to talk to Margaret? Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Karen. Hi. I'm concerned. What would you feel is the best approach to secure a person's little house and savings they may have, as far as should they increase their auto insurance to $1 million? I mean, not that I have $1 million, but do you, because car and house insurance is so expensive now, should you approach it that way, umbrella policy or a trust? How do you secure that if something happens, even though, you know, you may or may not necessarily be at fault, to feel that you don't lose every little thing you have?
Margaret, do you have, and I'm going to put you on hold in a minute because there's a definite echo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me just put you on hold. So you know, I'm not quite sure exactly what Margaret is concerned about, but, you know, is there a potential lawsuit? Is she worried that some credit card is going to be racked up and she's going to lose her? I don't know. But you can put your house in a trust, and that's not a bad thing to do. You can go to, and you should have an estate plan anyway. So perhaps the first thing, Margaret, you should do is get an estate plan. You can do a simple will and a trust, and you can put all of your assets into a trust, which is sort of a fictitious entity, but it protects, it's a layer of protection for creditors. So that's the first thing you can do. I don't take it Margaret was doing business. If she's doing business, she should incorporate. And if you incorporate and keep your assets separate, you can keep the creditors from your personal assets by insulating, making it just be that they could just sue the corporation and not get to your personal assets. The third thing that she could do is to get umbrella insurance. So, yes, it's expensive to insure your house and your car. However, the umbrella policy, you get an umbrella policy. It's really not that expensive, just a few hundred dollars, and it will insure over and above what the policy covers for your car and for your house. So you should look at your car policy and you should see how much the damages are that it would cover. And you know what? If you get into a car accident with somebody and you hurt that person in any specific way, it could easily go over $100,000 or $150,000, easily. So I always say, raise your limits on your car and make sure your house is fully insured, but not over-insured. Make sure whatever your value is of the house that you would get that amount that it's worth today, not more, not less. And you should then get that umbrella policy that covers over and above what those two policies cover. And I would say just for maybe, I'm just going to guess, $400 or $500 for the year, you can get like close to $1 million. I'm just going to, that's a really rough estimate. And that would make you safe for a lot of reasons and for in a simple way to do it. But, you know, Margaret, if you have any questions for me, email me. And if you have any more specific reasons why you might be concerned about losing something, maybe I can give you some more specific advice. WGN at AskKarenConti.com. You can always call me at my office, 312-332-7800. We're going to take a break, and you're listening to WGN. It's the Karen Conti Show. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to give out my numbers again. I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been doing it for about 33 years now, so I'm happy to help you. My number at the office is 312-332-7800. And better yet, email me at WGN at AskKarenConti.com. Give me the facts. Give me where you're, what county you're in, when the event happened, and what you're expecting. And hopefully I will get to help you. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show.